So faced with that, we then look further in the code, and we found another code section that says an adjustment, conditional use, or other land use review, and that includes CCPR, may not be requested in order to allow an exception to the regulation in question, the regulation in question being its current zoning. So our concern with filing concurrently is if we were so fortunate to win those approvals from the City Council, our opponents would have a very solid argument on appeal that there was a procedural error in granting the CCPR at the same time, and we would then have to come back and start over. There's no harm in not applying for the CCPR because anything you do today is subject to the CCPR being ultimately approved. Commissioner Fish, you asked a question as to what can actually be built under the current regulations. Currently, as we've outlined, 260 to 280 apartments and associated parking can and will be built as an outright permitted use. None of the MAC uses are outright permitted uses. A portion of the MAC uses by square footage can be approved, but with only a conditional use, which has standards that are very similar to the standards we're dealing with here today. And then another component of the square footage of the MAC uses cannot be built at all, even with a conditional use, because there's a cap of 20% on the amount of square footage that can be covered by the conditional use. So that's the situation. So the choice before you today is really whether the city is better served by the permitted apartment project or whether it's better served by that project plus the MAC parking and overnight units. The evidence in the record is very strong, both anecdotally and professionally, that the MAC parking that we are seeking will reduce traffic congestion and the excessive demand on on-street parking. That's demonstrated not only by Kittleson's report, but by the testimony of neighbors who testified in favor of this. The Kittleson report, as you might recall, pointed out that 5 months out of the year, every day, 200 cars are turned away during the peak periods of time. That's the problem. Where do we get the 225 stalls? It's approximately equivalent to the people that are being turned away. And that is a fact. That's not a supposition. Kittleson did the studies that prove that in their report. It's also interesting to note that a number of people living in Goose Hollow responded to the same effect. There was a 2013 survey done by Goose Hollow Neighborhood Association and asked the neighbors what were they concerned about. Of those who park on streets, 68% of those permit parkers say they experience difficulty finding a parking space twice a week or more, and 40% say every day. They did a question of which parking initiatives do a majority of residents moderately or strongly support. What they supported was require dedicated parking in new high-density residential slash commercial structures. 81% of the several hundred respondents checked that box. And one neighbor at Block 7 said, they, the MAC, overflow residential parking on the streets every day of the week, and it's getting increasingly worse. Now, the staff and the hearings officer both agree that there is a need for additional parking. They are the only impartial, objective evaluators of the evidence in the record, and they have seen the entirety of the evidence. One thing that is really important for you to understand is that the hearings officer imposed some very important and powerful conditions on this approval. The MAC has to come up with a parking management plan and a transportation demand management plan. That is not required now. This is going to give the city far more regulatory capability to deal with traffic created by the MAC Club and the parking and how it's managed by the MAC Club. In addition to that, those plans have to have 20-year mode split goals spelled out. In addition to that, they have to be standards to measure and whether those targets are in fact being achieved. And then there have to be enforcement mechanisms to ensure that those targets are going to be met. That's a far more powerful situation for the city to make sure that traffic and parking are managed in the best way possible by the MAC Club as we go forward. In addition, I think you're well aware that we're also going to need to get the CCPR that will follow on to this. And then we have to go through design review as well. Those two, plus those conditions, will assure that this project can be compatible with the neighborhood. Now, very briefly, a couple of points that people who just testified raised. Number one, special events at the MAC Club are declining. They're not increasing. One of the governors on special events is that we have inadequate parking. The Butler Block as an alternative site, we don't own that. We just simply don't own it and have no capability to buy it. And here's land that we do own that can be connected with a tunnel and avoid the traffic, the circulation that might occur with the Butler Block. Jerry Powell has somehow argued that this is a legislative proceeding and the burden's higher. This is not a legislative proceeding. Legislation is when you propose it. You're the applicant. This has been quasi-judicial from day one. The harsh proposal. 5 years ago, there was a lunchtime meeting with the manager of the club, and the discussions ended. There's nothing more to it than that. Now, on the master plan, we very much obviously agree with the city attorney's interpretation and analysis. The fact of the matter is, number one, the master plan does not say that Block 7 will always be used consistent with the RH zone. What it says is that a possible future use is to have mixed use, residential, retail, parent, neighborhood, and MAC club uses, including parking. So even if the master plan still pertained, we are consistent with what that master plan says. What we said in our letter in 1995, before the zone change, was we analyzed with the staff whether the then 1992 master plan would continue. My letter says very explicitly, the master plan will continue until it is terminated. And what the city attorney's analysis shows you is that when the uses that were subject to conditions become outright permitted uses, that terminates the master plan. In that proceeding in 1995, there was no reliance by the hearings officer or the city on the continued existence of the master plan as a precondition to the rezoning. It simply is an inaccurate statement. If you go read what the hearings officer's decision was, that's very clear. What the hearings officer held was the application for zone change included a statement that the master plan and its conditions will remain intact after the zone change. It is not necessary for the purpose of this review to determine the general status of the master plan. Whether or not the master plan continues in effect need not be decided in order to approve this zone change. There was no reliance, as Mr. Black has argued, by the city on the continuity of the master plan. In effect, the hearings officer basically said that the analysis in my previous letter, she didn't agree with. What the city relied on coming out of the master plan was that section that talked about the utilities and the capacity of the public services. In that zone change case, we were conforming the zoning to the new comprehensive plan that was adopted earlier by the city council. And in order to do a conforming zone change to plan, what you have to show is that there are adequate public services. That was the crux of that case. It didn't go beyond that. Finally, Mr. Black argues that somehow the city is estopped. It's an ancient legal concept. City has stopped from changing the zoning on this because of a prior reliance on the master plan. Unfortunately, that's wrong. The city cannot be bound by an estoppel in the exercise of its governmental and regulatory authority. You can't estop the government. You can in certain contractual situations, private transactions, basically, but you can't in terms of the exercise of your governmental functions. So I guess what it comes down to is what I said a few minutes ago. It's which of these two alternatives do you believe is going to be in the best interests of the city and the neighborhood? You have the staff supporting it. You have the hearings officer saying, out of 105 applicable comprehensive plan goals and policies, the project we are proposing will equally or better serve those policies to the tune of 104 out of 105. And the other one is slightly less. That to me is a very compelling analysis that shows why granting a comprehensive plan change and zone change is not only permitted, allowed, but it's better in terms of accomplishing those 104 policies in the comprehensive plan. So your choice is you can have the apartment building without the MAC Club parking. That will happen. It's outright permitted. Or alternatively, you can have the benefits of reduced on-street parking demand, reduced traffic circulation by allowing the Mac Club proposed uses to be included in that building. If the apartments are built as permitted under current zoning, there will not be a future opportunity to have parking tied into the existing Mac Club garage through a tunnel. There's simply no other site when that can occur. So all the benefits of keeping the cars from moving around from one block to another block, even if there was another garage to be built somewhere else, would be lost. We respectfully request and urge you to follow the recommendations of the staff and the hearings officer and enable this project to proceed with its attendant benefits of reduced traffic and improved on-street parking capabilities. So if you have questions, I'd be happy to respond.
I've got one or two. One is particular, I guess the other is more conceptual. So you don't believe that it was legally possible for you to apply for a consolidated application that would consist of the comp plan and zone change amendment and CCPR and design review?
Mayor Hales, my analysis was that it's far too great a risk. And
possible but risky.
Did the staff tell you that you could not?
No, the staff couldn't answer our legal arguments to our satisfaction. And we had to take the responsibility to advise the client, because what the client was facing is if we went ahead and applied for the CCPR at the same time as the plan change and zone change, and we got both, and we had a consolidated proceeding or record, and we got to LUBA, and LUBA said the code didn't allow you to apply for the CCPR at the same time, LUBA would then remand it back to the city, and we'd have to go through yet another proceeding to untangle that. And given the fact that we ultimately have to get a CCPR, it didn't seem prudent to take that risk.
Okay. So that was a judgment call.
Right, and if you read those code sections, I think you'd take pause as well.
I understand the risk, but there's also an upside to that, at least in terms of understanding of what's the whole package entails.
Right, and there
neighbors
was
and others.
There was actually a potential upside to the applicant as well.
Sure,
to do it both at the same time. Yeah. But I couldn't honestly tell them there wasn't substantial risk. And when you read those code sections, I think you can see it.
I hear you.
Just ask a question off that point, Mayor, because I think it's a great point, Mr. Janik. So your analysis is based on your reading of the code. Is there anything which this council or the parties could do to alter your risk assessment?
Not at this point. I mean, you could have changed the code. For example,
I understand that, but
no.
Why is that?
Because
why couldn't we? Why isn't there, by stipulation or some other mechanism, some way around that to limit your risk?
You can't change the code by stipulation.
I understand.
You can only change the code by a legislative action.
But someone would have to raise the issue at LUBA.
Yes, and I suspect the excellent opposition we have will certainly raise that issue.
Anybody could raise it.
Right.
And that's your concern, that we could nail it down to your satisfaction.
No, any person who writes a letter to you or shows up at a hearing who disagreed with that could take it to LUBA. And then we'd have the issue of whether the council properly changed the rules, so to speak, in the course of a quasi-judicial proceeding, which is another big issue in LUBA.
Well, is there some other mechanism which would allow us to retain jurisdiction pending that process with you coming back to us?
Well, you will have jurisdiction, so to speak, now because we have to come before you with a CCPR.
But that's a separate matter.
Once we've
decided this issue, we're done on that, and the appellate rights, I mean the appeal and other things kick in. Is there some way for us to take limited action now so that you can pursue it concurrently and we get a second bite of the apple on this matter?
I don't know any way you could change the procedural rules that way. You are going to get a full opportunity to review the CCPR, and we can't go forward with the plan change or zone change unless the CCPR is approved.
So let me go up to a higher altitude here for a moment, because it's been part of my struggle to make a decision about this case. I've thought about some syllogisms with other situations, because this is a pretty novel land use case. You've been in front of the council lots of times on lots of cases. I've been here a time or two on these before. I think this is the first time that I can recall where the issue of a comp plan and zone change amendment was turning on the possibility of providing parking on an adjacent parcel. Now, I understand that the comp plan is a legal document and applies to everybody, but we also, in both the legislative side of our planning process and to some extent in these quasi-judicial cases, should take into account the unique situation of an institutional land use, whether it's a college or a hospital or, in this case, a private athletic club. But I'm trying to think of what would the difference be. How could we decide any differently if Providence Hospital came to us and said, we want a zone change across Gleason Street at 47th, and we want to go ahead and build an apartment building there, but we want to build parking underneath it for the hospital. Or if University of Portland were to say the same thing about Willamette Boulevard. So I know that we don't set precedent per se in these cases, but I'm trying to think of why it would be okay to permit this particular comp plan amendment on that basis and not at least raise an expectation that it would be possible elsewhere.
Well, that expectation would be a false expectation because each case would have to be looked at separately under the comprehensive plan policies on its own merits. This is an unusual case, but unusual facts make unusual cases. This does not set a precedent for another institutional user saying, there's an open pathway to get parking through comprehensive plan changes. That is only the case if they can do what we've done here, which is to convince the hearings officer, at least, that we equally or better meet 104 out of 105 comprehensive plan policies. That is the same set of rules that governs, as you've characterized it, institutional kind of land use changes, or somebody who has not an institutional but has two blocks next to one another, and the only way they can achieve something is through a comp plan change. It's the same. They're all quasi-judicial decisions that have to stand separately on their own merits. There's no precedential effect.
All right. I believe that. Okay. That's helpful. Thank you. Other questions for Mr. Janik?
Well, I'm interested in your memo December 1st, asserting that all of the new parking is preservation parking, that none of it is visitor parking.
Correct.
So your assertion is that there won't be any more events that would... I guess let me back up because that conflicts with what Mr. Haley so helpfully just gave us in terms of the four kinds of park of the Central City Parking Guidelines. That says that preservation parking is new parking designed to serve older buildings that do not have their own parking supply. Well, I guess your assertion is that it's not adequate, but it's tied to redevelopment of surface parking lots.
That's a characterization that is not in the code. It's a historic statement about what came about when the Central City Parking Plan concept was adopted in Section 33.510 of the code. It started with the notion that there are a number of older buildings or buildings without parking, that you can have older buildings with and older buildings without and newer buildings without, that were in the core part of the city, and there were surface parking areas. And the idea was that at some point you could see the surface parking being aggregated up into parking garages, and buildings without sufficient parking could then take some of that parking on a long-term basis and use it. But if you go to the code, there is simply no statement in the code that this is only for historic buildings or it's only for buildings that are totally lacking in parking.
And what would we be preserving under this scenario?
You're preserving the viability of the building that exists. That was the concept behind preservation parking.
How many, does the Kittleston study as to when there are these 200 needed spaces, is that correlated with when there are special events at the Met?
No, it is not correlated with that. If you look at the record, we have in the Kittleston report a 12-month analysis of what capacity the garage is operating at each and every month. And it shows that in five or six of those months during the year, and I can't remember which ones they are, the garage is at or exceeding capacity, and that's when they turned.
Did it look at, was there an event in the neighborhood or at the MAC that night, that time?
Well, this is a month-long picture.
Right.
So there may be events within that month, but you have during the entirety of that month at peak hours, cars being turned away.
Right, and I know from my own experience that there are event months where there's a lot of things at a lot of different events, and I go to about five of them a week in the normal course of
Commissioner,
things.
I can't recall the report that well, quite frankly, to tell you if there was a correlation between a month-long study and events.
I guess my question was that issue looked at?
I can't recall.
Okay, thank you.
But I can tell you that events have been declining. That's in the record, and they are now at a lower level than they were before. And the parking analysis from 2012 and 13 shows these problems.
And is part of the reason for asking for it so that the events can go back up again?
No. No.
Hey, folks, hey.
If you would like someone from the MAC Club to tell you that, they come up and tell you that.
I appreciate your answer. I'm also looking at the I'm struggling with the concept of not being able to apply for all of the necessary reviews at the same time. We do that routinely on many different
issues. Maybe I could just add one other thing there. There are two things. We couldn't apply for a design review today for a building that isn't even allowed. I mean, it's the same kind of concept.
You couldn't apply for it before, but you could apply for it concurrently.
No. The code has a provision that the only clear provision is you can apply concurrently for a comp plan change and a zone change if the zone change is congruent with the comp plan change. We could not find clear language in the code that said you could couple any other land use reviews with a comp plan change. Okay. And that's the problem. And on a personal note, I have to tell you, a client comes to you and says, can we do this? And that was the question. And I said, you do that at your peril, because we can't get a clear answer. And the city is in no position. The city can give us their view, but the city attorney is not going to say, I give you an ironclad legal opinion that you can do this. Okay. That's the problem.
So the challenge, maybe that's a structural problem that we need to look at when we do the zoning code changes as part of the comprehensive plan analysis.
You could fix it.
Because part of my concern is I can't say yes to this without looking at that parking analysis. I guess in some ways that's good for us, because we are then going to be looking at the comprehensive plan. Do we want commercial zoning on this block? That's the issue that we are faced with.
Janik, I have a couple questions. Mr. Fritz asked you about the intended use for the parking, and you were going to bring someone from the MAC Club to talk about whether it was intended for events and things of that nature. Is there a potential condition of approval that we could consider that would memorialize that?
Yes.
That's question number one.
I think that would be hard for BDS to enforce such a condition of approval.
Okay, we'll come back to that. I don't want to beat a dead horse on the master plan issue, but I just find it compelling and hard to sort out, so I want to ask you a couple questions that I posed to your to other counsel. Just assume for the moment the master plan did apply, and you've made the argument it doesn't. But if it were to apply, and you actually were the author of some of the correspondence back then, so it's fortuitous that you're here.
You're testing my 20-year-old memory, actually 22.
I look at the June 30th, 1995 letter signed by Dennis Cusack, addressed to planning. It is not the club's intention to discontinue the master plan. We intend to continue to be bound by and observe the master plan and all of its conditions. Take that as the point of departure. And then your submission of November of 1995, in which you state development of residential housing with some commercial space on Block 7 is a permitted use under the RH zone and is a possible future use under the master plan. Where in the documents does it state, if anywhere, explicitly, that the MAC Club reserved the right to seek a zone change?
Nowhere in the documents does it say that, because there is no need to say that. You always have the right to seek a zone change, because there's nothing in here that says you can't seek a zone change. And there's nothing in here that commits the block forever to RH. Well, I mean, why would you think of bringing that up in 1995 in anticipation of getting the clarity you're now asking for? I mean, it just doesn't make any sense, because there's no prohibition. You can always ask for a zone change. You might not get it, but you can ask for it.
Well, the flip side is, why would all the documents explicitly anchor the expectations around the RH zone? I understand that your argument that there was nothing that said we waive our right, and it was implicit, therefore, that we could always seek a zone change. But I'm just struck by the fact that it was written in such a way that perhaps a layperson might think that the commitment ran to the zoning and had some impact on the question of whether the zone could change. And
the commitment didn't run to the zoning. You don't find in here a commitment that runs to the RH zone. What you find in these letters is an effort on the part of the staff and myself to try to figure out and analyze what would be the impact of the master plan as we went forward. And you can see that Elizabeth Norman, the hearings officer, didn't agree with this. And she's the authority. These are exchanges of information trying to figure it out.
Pretty good memory.
Further questions for Mr. Janik? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
And do we have any further questions for staff before we begin our deliberations here?
Actually, Ms. Janik will probably say that this wouldn't totally reassure him, but I'm curious, given the idea of a threat of a LUBA appeal if you were to pursue a Central City parking review simultaneously with this proceeding, I was wondering if we could ask counsel for the appellants if she could volunteer whether they might agree not to, whether they at least might agree not to do that.
Well, Commissioner, I'm a little worried about that, because she can't bind every single person who's written a letter or testified here. And so if we're boxed into that, then one person can file the appeal. And
I understand, but I thought that, I mean, the appellant's represented by a lawyer.
Before you go, Ms. Janik, when might that process be complete?
Which process?
The parking analysis.
Well, we'll have to wait and see.
If it was done concurrently, how long would, if you launched it today, how long roughly would it take before you got to someone had a right to consider an appeal?
Well, someone will have a right to consider an appeal of this case fairly soon.
I understand.
The CCPR review would probably take 120 days.
To do the review.
To do the review, depending upon staff time and all that.
120 days.
And then 21 days after a final decision.
So 140 days.
Right.
So by under an aggressive timeline, within 150 days, you'd know whether someone had appealed.
Yes, under a separation scenario, which we're under now.
Right.
Barring any scheduling difficulties, if it gets appealed to the council, that might take longer, but that's a rough time frame.
Okay.
Thank you. Ms. Baker, do you want to answer Commissioner Novick's question?
Yeah, thank you, Commissioner Novick. I understand where the commission might be heading, and I would be happy to talk to my clients and decipher Mr. Janik's concern about concurrent application. I think we could certainly move towards some agreement that the procedural matter of concurrently applying for CPR review along with this comp plan amendment zone change wouldn't be an issue that we would raise at LUBA. You know, we would certainly look to the substance of any CCPR application and review, but the technical issue of applying wouldn't necessarily.
Mayor, can I just stay here a second? Can I just
thank you.
Ventilate a couple of issues?
Yeah, do you need Ms. Baker?
Let's just stay there for a second. And maybe Mr. Janik, why don't you come up? Just we have the benefit of both lawyers, and we'll put someone in between you if necessary. So what's the clock under which we're operating on this proceeding?
We have no time limit under state law.
So we're not.
Right.
So that's
comp plan amendment.
So we
could remand it back to the hearings officer and require this concurrent review before we make a decision, right?
There is no express authority in the zoning code for a remand.
Okay.
It's simply not an option that the code contemplates.
I just want to walk through a couple basic propositions here. So we're not on the clock. We're not on the clock. So could we, for example, continue this hearing for the purpose of the parties seeking to negotiate an agreement, as Commissioner Novick has proposed? If such an agreement is reached, have that process go forward while we continue the proceeding. And at such time as the parking analysis is done, and assuming there's no appeal, have it come back to us as a consolidated matter. I'm just asking. Mayor, you said this is a unique proceeding.
It is. I think I know the answer to your question, but I think I'll let the city attorney answer it first. I think the answer is yes, but...
I may not have stated it very elegantly, but do you get the drift?
I do get the drift. What's a little bit difficult is that as a comprehensive plan amendment, map amendment, and zone change comes to you as a recommendation from the hearings officer, so only you can make the final decision on that.
Right.
A central city parking review is a quasi-judicial review that would only get to you by appeal.
Right, and similar with design review.
The same with design review.
If it doesn't come...
So a separate central city parking review decision by the hearings officer normally wouldn't come to you except on appeal. Pardon me?
It's appealed to us, though, right?
It can be appealed to you, but it wouldn't come to you unless appeal.
Right.
But we could imagine a scenario in which it would not get appealed.
but by the way, if it didn't get appealed, it's... That has some impact on our deliberation as well. That's just another trigger.
Right.
Well, also, yeah. I mean, even if it weren't appealed to us, or if we decide we didn't want to wait for an appeal, we could still read it, right?
It could be part of our deliberation if we were to continue this matter.
I think one way it could get back to you is if the Central City Parking Review was applied for as an amendment and adjunct to this application, so that it would come to you as part and parcel of that application, ultimately.
Mr. Janik, you said earlier that your client has two options, and you described the difference between the two, the as of right and then what he's seeking through this proceeding. And you hear what we're struggling with, trying to sort of think through a number of scenarios. Does some creative way of linking our determination on the comprehensive plan amendment before us and the CCPR... It gives us a chance to consider them both concurrently. That gets you off that addresses the concerns you have about being put in a legal peril. Does that create a time problem, which in effect would change your client change his view about the relief that he seeks? I mean, are you under the clock in terms of his development?
I need to talk to my client, but I can tell you, time is important. But we need to decide exactly we need to evaluate what you're thinking here about what it might do for time. The other big issue is we don't want to be wasting our time if we're not going to get a comp plan change and zone change, and we won't know that until we go through the CCPR. But you appear to be linking the two together, so we may have to deal with that uncertainty and just go through the CCPR process under some kind of a revised...
You say wasting your time. You mean?
I mean, if the council
has already decided that under no that regardless
right,
the outcome,
right,
you won't get the relief.
Right, right, exactly. I mean,
I've been on the council long enough to know that I would never bet a dollar on either, however any of these things come out. But you may be more prescient.
I'm not a betting person.
No, but I'm constantly surprised because I think people do keep an open mind and try to get the right outcome.
Okay. Do we have any more questions for these two fine people, or should we try to make a decision?
I'll confer with my client, see what they're thinking about this.
Okay.
By the way, colleagues, I have to say that as referenced earlier to the smell of sewage, which seems now prescient because I just saw an email that said that there's a combined sewer overflow.
Mr. Novick, I appreciate you placing that on the record of a land use proceeding.
Thank you, Mr. Janik. Thank you both.
Should we call a 5-minute recess for Dunsa Caucus?
I think we should allow Mr. Janik to talk to his client, take a 5-minute recess, and come back.
Okay. Call this a compassion break.
A mercy break as well.
Charlie, I think the point that